Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we'll have a report on low rates of COVID-19 vaccines in rural areas here in East County, plus an update on California's June 15th reopening, what that includes, and what San Diego County rules will be lifted then. Now, if you're not yet vaccinated, you might be surprised to hear of a growing list of places where you can't go, from cruise ships to many foreign countries, as well as some major events right here at home, and we'll have details. A judge has blocked a second sexually violent predator from being placed near Mount Helix, and now State Senator Jones is introducing legislation to make it harder for the state to release sex offenders in East County. Rattlesnake season is here. Find out how to protect your dog from snake bites on today's show. Santee has hit the pause button on some major projects, including a community center and a community choice energy program, and we'll have details. SDG&E is hosting some drive-through wildfire safety fairs. Find out where on today's show. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including the latest on the ceasefire between Israel and Palestine. Next, we'll take you on a visit to the Water Conservation Garden, one of East County's hidden treasures. Hear about a new bill to reduce plastic pollution and about a new county action to provide naloxone to the public. That's a nasal spray that can save lives from opioid overdoses. We'll also have news about a lawsuit filed by landlords against the county over the latest eviction moratorium. And with gardening season here, Master Gardener Connie Beck will tell you about some of her favorite trees to plant in our region. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Data provided by the county's Health and Human Services Agency as of May 15th reveals that countywide, 55.9% of those eligible have had at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, but a breakdown by zip code shows broad disparities. COVID-19 vaccination rates in East County communities are significantly below the county average, yet most rural, mountain, and desert communities in East County haven't even been documented. Countywide, the highest rate in San Ysidro, where an astonishing 99% of those eligible have had at least one vaccine, perhaps a tribute to the county's efforts to outreach into hard-hit communities of color. Chula Vista's zip codes also have high vaccination rates ranging from around 63% to over 73%, while National City has a 60% vaccination rate. By contrast, in East County, the highest vaccination rates of any community are in La Mesa, where the two zip code areas have around 59% and 56% rates. East County's other incorporated cities have lesser rates: Lemon Grove, 54%, Santee, 49%, and in El Cajon, where the mayor has been vocal about defying COVID-19 shutdown orders and masking mandates, the rates are even lower at 43% and 47% for its two zip code areas. Among unincorporated areas listed in East County, Alpine has a 45% vaccination rate, Lakeside just 42%, Spring Valley 56%, Ramona 42%, and Rancho San Diego just under 50%. No listings are provided for zip codes with fewer than 10,000 people or less than 6 vaccines, so there is no data for any of these East County communities. Boulevard, Campo, Descanso, Dulzura, Guate, Hukumba, Jamul, Mount Laguna, Pine Valley, Potrero, Tecate, Borrego Springs, Julian, or Warner Springs. Data is important since it could help shine a light on which communities need better access to vaccination clinics, transportation to vaccine sites, and reliable information for those not yet vaccinated on vaccine safety and efficacy. Some rural communities have had no vaccine clinics or only one-day vaccinations at fire stations with little advance publicity. Has the push to get vaccinations administered in densely populated areas with high minority populations, those hardest hit by COVID-19, resulted in inadvertently ignoring East County's often remote rural, desert, and mountain towns? As mask mandates are lifted, might unvaccinated people spread COVID and turn their communities into COVID hotspots? vaccination rates are noticeably lower overall in red areas of the county where vaccine hesitancy or anti-vax views are more prevalent among some, but not all, conservatives. Such views were fostered by former President Donald Trump and politicians who falsely claimed the virus was a hoax. Some conspiracy sites have also spread false rumors to discredit vaccines, such as bizarrely claiming the shots contain tracking implant devices. Some Republican leaders have begun speaking out to educate the public on vaccines and dispel myths. El Cajon Councilman Steve Goebel showed slides at a recent city council meeting to educate the public on the much higher death rate from COVID-19 than the flu, along with information on vaccine safety and side effects. Even Mayor Wells, who has long been calling for COVID restrictions to be lifted, says he has been vaccinated. In La Mesa, an initiative led by Councilman Jack Hsu, a Democrat, has pushed for vaccine equity in the city, including a vaccine clinic scheduled for May 22nd at Helix High School. La Mesa is also home to a Supercenter vaccination site at Grossmont Center. In other parts of the county, most City of San Diego zip codes have vaccination rates above the county average, though a few are slightly below. In North County, coastal areas have mostly high vaccination rates, but some inland areas are far lower, with rural Fallbrook at only 38%, Valley Center at 47%, and the Pala Indian Reservation at 45%. As with the East County rates, these show a rural-urban divide in vaccine equity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Angela Kurish.
15 months after COVID-19 shutdowns began, the state of California will be lifting all capacity limits and color-coded tiers starting June 15th, allowing all businesses to reopen at full capacity without physical distancing. Locally, that includes Padre games at full capacity, a return of symphony concerts, festivals, street fairs, and more. The announcement came Friday from Dr. Mark Gailey, head of the California Health and Human Services Agency, who indicated the state will largely follow guidelines of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There will, however, be some requirements for mega indoor events as well as guidelines for massive outdoor events. In addition, rules remain pending for workplaces, and some travel limits may be imposed for travelers from nations with high rates of COVID in accordance with CDC recommendations. Now, for indoor events with over 5,000 attendees, the state will require organizers to confirm proof of vaccinations or negative COVID tests. For large outdoor events with over 10,000 attendees, the state will recommend, though not require, that operators verify vaccination or a negative COVID test. People who aren't vaccinated or tested can also be allowed to attend large outdoor events if they wear a mask, the state suggests. The state will not issue vaccine passports, Gailey confirmed. However, organizers can easily ask to see a vaccination card, which many people have photographed and scanned onto their cell phones. The California Division of Occupational Safety and Health, or CalOSHA, will vote June 3rd on revised workplace standards. Employment attorney Dan Eaton says you are going to have very different rules that apply to those who are fully vaccinated and those who are not fully vaccinated, 10 News reports. The new rules may require businesses to allow vaccinated workers to go maskless, but require those not vaccinated to undergo weekly COVID testing, perhaps wear masks, or provide physical distancing. Regardless of whatever the state requires, local governments can impose stricter standards, and businesses will be free to voluntarily choose to continue requiring masks of workers or customers. Businesses that don't require masks also cannot prevent a worker or customer from wearing masks or ask why they have one on. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health report. California and San Diego officials have announced that they will wait until June 15th to lift mask mandates for most public places. The four-week wait allows young people age 12 and up to get vaccinated, since the CDC just approved COVID-19 vaccines for younger teens starting last week. Starting June 15th, assuming cases remain low, as expected, Californians who are fully vaccinated will be able to go without masks in most indoor settings, according to Dr. Mark Gailey, California's Health and Human Services Secretary. Vaccinated people can already go without masks in most outdoor settings. Dr. Gailey urges all Californians to get vaccinated to ensure that infection and hospitalization rates remain low across the state and that we can all return to the activities we love. Nathan Fletcher, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, announced on Twitter, San Diego County is aligned with the California Department of Public Health and will wait until June 15th to adopt CDC mask guidance. He continues, "This short time frame allows us to ensure everyone has access to the vaccine and time for businesses and entities across our county to prepare for the change." Fletcher credits a careful posture for remaining in a low positivity rate and one of the lowest death rates. He adds, "Continuing the mask requirement for a few more weeks provides an added layer of protection as we work on getting more San Diegans vaccinated." Vaccinated individuals can already go without masks outdoors in San Diego County, except at crowded events such as concerts or sporting events. Unvaccinated people are asked to wear masks outdoor wherever physical distancing can't be maintained. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, recently advised that due to the effectiveness of the vaccines, mask mandates can be lifted as states deem appropriate. However, the federal government is still requiring masks for everyone on airplanes and public transit, such as buses, trains, or trolleys, as well as in crowded settings. Once mask mandates are eased, June 15th, businesses will still have the option to require masks or proof of vaccination for those not wearing masks. Some businesses may still opt to require masks, but others, including retail giants Walmart, Costco, and Trader Joe's, have said they will no longer require masks for fully vaccinated customers in states that have lifted mask mandates. Sharp Healthcare sent out an email to some patients advising, while the CDC announced new masking guidelines for fully vaccinated individuals, these interim public health recommendations do not apply to healthcare settings. Face masks are still required at all Sharp Healthcare facilities by order of the California Department of Public Health.
With over two-thirds of Californians now at least partially vaccinated and half of them fully vaccinated, many people are looking forward to resuming normal activities. But if you haven't had the COVID-19 vaccine yet, you may be surprised to learn that you won't be allowed to go many places. Not getting the vaccine is a personal choice, but a growing number of places are opting to protect their customers, workers, or patients by banning the unvaccinated. Others are allowing unvaccinated people only if they can pass a COVID test, but who really wants to have your nose swabbed every time you go to a major event? Similarly, some places are allowing unvaccinated travelers, but only if you both pass a COVID test and quarantine in your hotel room for a number of days after arriving, which can spoil those vacation plans unless you've got an extended trip. Rolling up your sleeve to get the vaccine can not only protect your health, but also save you inconvenience if you plan to go often to large sporting events, musical performances, or travel overseas. So where can't you go as of now if you're not vaccinated? At least 30 major U.S. colleges and universities have made COVID vaccines mandatory for students this fall, including the University of California, California State Universities, and such prestigious institutions as Yale and Stanford, CNBC reports. The cruise industry was hit hard by COVID. Outbreaks stranded some ships at sea for weeks or even months, with ports refusing entry to ships with infected passengers or crew members. Cruise ships remain grounded for many months, and now they're finally getting ready to resume. But every cruise line, or virtually every cruise line, is now requiring COVID-19 vaccinations of all passengers and crew members, Travel and Leisure reports. This includes major ocean-going cruise lines such as Carnival, Celebrity, and Royal Caribbean, as well as U.S. river cruise ships such as those run by American Cruise Lines and the American Queen Steamboat Company on the Mississippi River. At least a dozen nations have reopened to U.S. travelers, but only those who are vaccinated. That list includes Anglia, Bahamas, Barbados, Belize, British Virgin Islands, Croatia, Cyprus, Ecuador, Estonia, Republic of Georgia, Grenada, Guatemala, Iceland, Israel, Montenegro, Nepal, the Seychelles, and Tahiti. In addition, Europe plans to reopen to vaccinated travelers this summer, including some popular destinations such as France and Spain, according to Afar magazine. Some other countries are requiring foreign visitors to quarantine, but will waive that requirement if you have proof of vaccination. It should be noted that requiring vaccinations of travelers is really nothing new. Many countries have long required visitors to be vaccinated against a variety of diseases, ranging from measles to yellow fever. Even some U.S. destinations are encouraging vaccines to avoid hassles. Hawaii will waive its self-quarantine requirements and pre-travel testing for those who are vaccinated. Massachusetts requires tourists and returning residents to undergo a mandatory quarantine unless they've been fully vaccinated or show proof that they've had COVID in the last 90 days, Forbes reports. And according to CBS News, some sports arenas and stadiums in the U.S. are now requiring proof of vaccination for large crowded events such as concerts or sports. For instance, Oracle Park, home of the San Francisco Giants, and Citi Field, home of the Mets in New York, now require digital proof of vaccination. But others, such as Petco Park in San Diego, are allowing unvaccinated people inside if they pass a COVID test. COVID-19 devastated seniors in nursing homes, which had the highest death rates across the U.S. of any population sector. As a result, senior care facilities such as retirement centers, nursing homes, and board and care facilities shut down to all visitors for much of the past year. Fortunately, the Centers for Disease Control has issued new guidelines that now allow in-person visits for fully vaccinated people. Some, but not all, senior facilities will allow unvaccinated people to visit only outdoors, with precautions such as plexiglass barriers and mask wearing, but these can make it hard for some seniors to see and hear their guests. So if your loved one is in a care facility or at risk of winding up there, you might want to get vaccinated, realizing it takes several weeks to develop those full immunities. Many nursing homes and other senior care facilities are also refusing to admit new patients unless they've been vaccinated. This is a critical point to consider, since the need for skilled nursing care can arise suddenly after a serious fall, stroke, or other medical emergency. While you have a right to refuse to be vaccinated, senior care facilities also have the right to refuse to admit you in order to protect other vulnerable residents, with very limited exceptions. Some private event planners are choosing to keep guests safe by requiring proof of vaccination, even in areas where the law doesn't currently require this. Wedding Wire suggests that couples require either proof of vaccination or a recent negative COVID test, but that if anybody in the wedding party or immediate family is severely immune compromised or fighting cancer, it's acceptable to require that all guests be vaccinated. Requiring vaccines may also occur at destination weddings in places with high rates of COVID, such as Mexico. Some other event organizers, such as charities holding fundraising galas, are also limiting certain functions to vaccinated guests only, though other organizations are requiring COVID testing or simply requiring unvaccinated people to wear masks instead, depending on state and local health requirements. Now, if you're unvaccinated, you might find it harder to find work in some sectors or even risk losing your job. Employers are allowed to require workers to be vaccinated. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission ruled in December. The only exceptions are for a physical disability that prevents vaccination, such as if you're allergic to a vaccine ingredient, or a sincere religious objection, according to the J.D. Supra legal report. Delta Airlines recently announced that it is requiring vaccinations for all flight crew members, ABC News reports. The Broadway musical Hamilton is requiring all performers to be vaccinated before the show reopens this fall. Some hospitals, nursing homes, and other healthcare settings are requiring all of their workers to be vaccinated. Other employers are offering incentives rather than requirements to coax hesitant workers to get vaccinated and protect their coworkers from potential exposure to COVID. Once the FDA rules COVID vaccines are no longer considered experimental, many more employers are expected to start requiring that workers be vaccinated, especially in high-risk settings such as restaurants, doctors and dentists' offices, and schools. Both the state and county plan to lift mask mandates on June 15th in California for vaccinated individuals in most places, except hospitals, mass transit, and a few other exceptions. But unvaccinated people are still going to be required to wear those masks indoors in most places, such as stores, gyms, and theaters. So how do you provide your vaccine status? One obstacle is that different places are requiring different forms of proof. So it's a good idea to carry your CDC vaccination card with you in a clear protective holder, which is available at office supply stores, or take a photo of it and carry it on your phone. There are draft proposals in the works for privately developed healthcare apps to store your vaccine status, perhaps in partnership with companies such as Clear Health Pass or IBM's Digital Health Pass. While some countries provide vaccine passports for residents, the U.S. has so far said it will not do so. Last month, President Joe Biden and his administration said the country has no plans to introduce a universal vaccine passport system as part of an effort to protect privacy and rights of citizens, but that could change in the face of growing public opinion favoring development of a vaccine passport to help reopen international travel and more. Travel Pulse reports that a new poll conducted by Ipsos Survey found 61% of U.S. citizens said vaccine passports would be effective in making travel and large events safer. Worldwide, 72% favor vaccine passports, with support much higher in some parts of the world, including 90% in Peru and 78% in Canada. Now, here are a few facts to consider when you're deciding whether to get vaccinated. First, consider how safe the vaccines are and how any risks from vaccines compares to the risk of catching COVID. Over 250 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been given in the U.S. Overall, the COVID vaccine is among the safest on record. Now, nothing is risk-free, but only two serious effects have been documented from COVID vaccines used in the U.S., and both are very rare. One is a severe allergic reaction, although that is treatable for full recovery. The other is a serious type of blood clot that occurred only with the Johnson & Johnson vaccines, not with the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines, and only 7 people out of 1 million had that clotting issue. It is common to expect minor side effects, especially after the second vaccine with Pfizer and Moderna, such as fever, aches, and a sore arm that usually lasts for a day or two. For information on COVID-19 and the vaccine, you can visit the U.S. Centers for Disease Control website at cdc.gov. Now, it's important to weigh the known risk of the vaccine against the known risks of COVID. Over 560,000 Americans, that's over 500,000, have died of COVID. If you do get COVID, the odds of dying are about 1 in 100, but a lot higher than that if you're older or you have underlying conditions. If you go on a ventilator with COVID, your odds of surviving are only about 1% to 5%, depending on the hospital. According to interviews I've done with doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, and other medical professionals working with COVID-19 patients in hospital ICU units locally. In addition, many survivors have permanent long-term disabilities, such as damage to their lungs, stroke, heart, or brain damage. The vaccines are nearly 100% effective at preventing serious cases or death from COVID-19, so that's the good news. Not only do vaccines protect your own health, but also the health of others around you who might be more vulnerable if they contract the disease. While younger, healthier people are less apt to have a serious case of COVID, an unvaccinated young person can transmit COVID to others, which happened to a family member of mine whose coworker brought unmasked teens into the workplace. And my relative, who was only in his 50s, died. Thanks to vaccines, San Diego County's case rate of COVID has plummeted, and the rate of positive test results has dropped to just 1%. San Diego County has a goal to vaccinate 75% of those eligible, meaning age 12 and up. And so far, 64% of those are fully vaccinated, and 95% have had at least one dose. What if you've already had COVID? Well, studies have found that some people have contracted COVID again, as early as a couple of months later, while others still had antibodies up to 8 months later. Since you can get COVID a second time, the safest bet is to get the vaccine. The CDC advises that if you were treated, however, with monoclonal antibodies or convalescent plasma, you should wait 90 days before you get the vaccine. COVID-19 vaccines are free and available to anybody age 12 and up, whether or not you have insurance. To find a free vaccine location, you can go to sandiegocounty.gov and click the COVID-19 link. The site lists county-run vaccine sites and also private organizations offering free vaccines such as Albertsons, Costco, CVS, Family Health Centers, Ralph's, Rite Aid, Walgreens, Walmart, and more. Although the county does not have vaccine clinics in most rural or mountain areas, many of these private companies do offer vaccines in East County's most remote locations, and the vaccines are still free for everyone. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org.
Residents on Horizon Hills near Mount Helix are rejoicing after a ruling by Superior Court Judge Theodore Weathers blocking the state from placing Douglas Badger, a sexually violent predator, in their community. Earlier this month, another judge blocked placement of a second SVP, Merle Wakefield, at the same site. The residents are now planning a super victory party May 31st to celebrate their dual win to keep their community safe. In his decision, Judge Weathers observed, "The issue of placement is frequently the single most difficult issue for the parties and the court in satisfying the statutory requirements, because there's always public opposition." It is highly unlikely that any community would want such an offender living in their midst, the judge said of Badger, who has a long history of sexually assaulting both male and female young victims, including kidnappings at knife point. Still, the judge said, courts do need to listen to the community and consider specific facts. The judge received over 700 emails, 150 phone calls, and dozens of letters, in addition to many speakers during the hearing who opposed Badger's placement. The testimony indicated that 89 children live within 2,000 feet of the property, with two elementary schools also nearby and no school buses, so many children walk to school. The judge directed Liberty Healthcare, which contracts with the state to place sexually violent predators, to find an alternative location. Now, State Senator Brian Jones is seeking long-term protection for communities. He's introduced legislation that would limit the state's dumping of sexually violent predators in San Diego's East County, which has over 60% of the sex offenders released countywide. Senator Jones said that while the families of Mount Helix can breathe a sigh of relief, this game of hide the predator needs to stop. He announced that he's drafting legislation which would place a hard limit on the placement of SVPs within a county to no more than 40% in any supervisorial district. It would also mandate that the Department of State hospitals publicly report annually how many SVPs are in each county and in which supervisorial district. It would require making public safety be the highest criteria for any potential placement of a sexually violent predator. It would put the burden squarely on the director of state hospitals to assure that these new policies are followed and require that the Department of State Hospitals, the Corrections and Rehab Department, and CAL FIRE provide an inventory on which of their facilities have trailers that could house sexually violent predators instead of releasing them into neighborhoods. County Supervisor Joel Anderson and District Attorney Summer Steffen have also joined forces with supervisors, adopting a measure introduced by Anderson to get the county involved much earlier in the predator placement process and to assure early notification of communities and public officials about any proposed placement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org.
Dogs are 20 times more likely to be bitten by a rattlesnake than humans, and 25 times more likely to die. So how can you protect your dog? In San Diego County, rattlesnakes may be seen anywhere from the desert to the coast year-round, though peak season is from April through September, according to the county's Department of Animal Services. One way to protect your dog is with a rattlesnake vaccine. The initial vaccine requires a 2-shot series and annual vaccinations after that. It takes 30 days after vaccination for the antibodies to fully take effect. The rattlesnake vaccine will not prevent a dog from needing veterinary care if bitten, but it will give you more time to safely get your pet to a veterinary hospital. It will also decrease the negative effects of the venom and increase the chances of survival. In an article published by Nationwide's Pet Health Zone, Dr. Paula Ibsen, a staff veterinarian with Rock Ridge Biologics, says there are 3 benefits to the rattlesnake vaccine. Besides buying you more time to get your dog to the veterinarian if he was bitten, dogs will experience a lot less pain, tissue sloughing, and swelling. She says even if there is swelling at the bite site, vaccinated dogs will normally see swelling subside within 20 minutes. According to Jessica Jerk with the Helen Woodward Animal Center in San Diego's North County, the good news is, although deactivated venom in the vaccine is meant to protect against western diamondback rattlesnakes, it also protects against 7 different snakes with similar venom, KUSI reports. These include western diamondback, timber rattler, sidewinders, copperhead rattlesnakes, Massasauga rattlesnake, and several varieties of southern Pacific rattlesnake. Ask your veterinarian for more information on rattlesnake vaccines for your dog. Dog owners should be aware of rattlesnakes in any given setting, on a hike or in a backyard. Keep your dog on a leash in a habitat where these snakes live, especially at night. Be aware of where your dog is poking around, such as wood piles or brushy areas. Know the signs that a dog has been bitten by a rattlesnake, including low blood pressure, leading to wooziness or fainting, followed by extreme swelling at the site of the bite, which spreads rapidly along with bruising and redness. If you suspect your pet was bitten, seek emergency care, whether or not your pet has been vaccinated. You may also wish to consider rattlesnake avoidance classes for your dog, as well as removing items that may attract snakes to your yard, such as rodents, wood piles, or other nesting places. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, San Diego County's only accredited big cat and bear sanctuary led by Bobby Brink, worked with several other accredited sanctuaries and the U.S. Department of Justice last week on a large-scale rescue of endangered big cats at Tiger King Park in Oklahoma. In total, 69 big cats, including lions, tigers, lion-tiger hybrids, and a jaguar, were removed from Jeff and Lauren Lowe's facility due to ongoing Endangered Species Act violations. The couple took over that facility after its infamous prior owner, Joe Exotic, was convicted of murder for hire, as documented in a true crime TV series aired on Netflix. Two of those rescued female tigers are now housed and under the care of Lions, Tigers, and Bears, while the U.S. Department of Justice seeks forfeiture of the animals. The Lions, Tigers, and Bears rescue team brought three animal rescue haulers to Oklahoma to help with the transport of many tigers from the Tiger King Park to three accredited sanctuaries in the U.S., including Lions, Tigers, and Bears. Bobby Brink says she was honored to bring a team to Oklahoma to help with this major animal rescue operation. And she adds, "Our priority was relocating these big cats to accredited sanctuaries where they will receive proper veterinary care, diet, shelter, and habitats while the court decides what's next." The two rescued tigers will be under a mandatory quarantine for at least 30 days and will be treated by Lions, Tigers, and Bears veterinary team. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The ongoing pandemic has forced everyone, including local elected officials, to reevaluate their previous plans. So on May 12th, the Santee City Council pressed the pause button on two long-planned decisions, building a community center and joining a community choice energy program. The community choice program would have the city buy electric power from renewable sources directly instead of from SDG&E to get to zero greenhouse gas emissions faster. While the council made it clear that the city wasn't abandoning either plan, some members said that pandemic-related changes mean the city must step back and take a closer look at past decisions. Councilwoman Laura Koval said bringing services to neighborhoods instead of building a new community center might be more effective and certainly would save money. Mayor John Minto noted that instead of constructing a new building, the city could take over some of the recently vacated spaces, such as the Office Depot at Trolley Square Mall or other commercial spaces where tenants are struggling. Councilman Rob McNellis said the cost of materials related to constructing new buildings has risen by 400% and likely won't return to normal for a few years. He also noted a rise in vacant commercial space in the city, caused by a big increase in people ordering their goods online rather than shopping at a store. He said there's a lot of space opening up, and it's because big box stores are not making it. In early 2019, the Santee Council voted 4-1 to approve building a community center next to the Cameron YMCA on a 40,000-square-foot parcel now used as a parking lot. Mayor Minto opposed that plan because he wanted the center to include space for a library. At that time, the cost for the first phase, a two-story building, was estimated to cost between $8 million and $13.5 million. But the newest estimate is $12.8 million, and two additional phases would jack up the cost to over $50 million. Finance Director Tim McDermott said the city's budget for the project is $9 million, and that they would generate the funds for the first phase over the next two fiscal years. Councilman Ron Hall pointed out another vacant space in the Home Depot Shopping Center, formerly Hometown Buffet, is also available. Hall said, "I'd hate to give up on the project entirely." The City Council directed staff to return in about 4 months with a report on options for the community center. In the meantime, the council plans to hold a public workshop on the issue. The council also decided it needs more time to study the ramifications of entering into a Community Choice Aggregate Energy Program, or CCA, given what has happened to several existing CCAs in other parts of California. The council approved an ordinance in 2019 to implement a CCA program, but didn't determine whether that would be done on its own or through a partnership with other cities. Koval asked her colleagues to see how other CCAs are combining to offer customers reduced energy rates. She noted that San Diego County is apparently joining a Joint Powers Authority, or JPA, headed by the City of San Diego, and said that may not be the best format for a small city like Santee. Last month, the Board of Supervisors voted to hold discussions with the two existing CCAs for a potential partnership. The San Diego JPA will use a weighted vote, giving larger cities more votes based on population, which Koval said should be avoided at all costs. Hall said the supposed savings on electric bills coming with the CCA hasn't panned out in some areas, and said it may not be worth a $300,000 membership fee to pay for startup costs if consumers could wind up paying more. Also complicating things is the fact that SDG&E set goals of reaching total power generation from renewable sources by 2045. Also complicating things is the fact that SDG&E set goals of reaching total power generation from renewable sources by 2045, and today obtains about 44% of its power from solar and wind, according to a city staff report. Several council members noted that SDG&E is planning to abandon the power generation function altogether and concentrate solely on transmission and billing operations. Under a CCA, power is purchased from renewable sources, but transmission and managing customer bills would stay with SDG&E. Hall said, "At this point, I think we should sit tight and wait till this whole thing shakes out." Sitting things out, however, could violate terms of a lawsuit that the city recently settled with Preserve Wild Santee and other environmental groups over its climate action plan. That agreement calls for the city to make a good faith effort to either create its own CCA or join one in partnership with other areas. Minto directed staff to continue to investigate the CCA landscape to comply with the settlement agreement and be on the lookout for anything unexpected. You never know what's going to pop up. It might be some great miracle that comes along, he concluded. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Fire season is upon us, and SDG&E invites you to attend a drive-through wildfire safety fair. You can learn how to protect your family and property, as well as get first-hand safety tips from SDG&E and their partners. You'll get information about stocking an emergency kit, developing an emergency plan, modifying space around your home to resist wildfires, and more. Now, due to the continued COVID and social distancing requirements, this year's wildfire safety fairs will be drive-through events that provide preparedness information to communities most at risk of wildfires. SDG&E is asking participants to wear your masks to these events, which are all on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon. The upcoming wildfire safety fairs will be held at Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center on June 12th, Julian Unified School District's headquarters June 26th, the Viejas Casino East parking lot in Alpine on August 7th, and the Ramona Outdoor Community Center and Rodeo Grounds on August 28th. Everybody attending will get a backpack per car stocked with preparedness supplies and other giveaways while supplies last. There is no admission fee for these events, which also include displays, music, kettle corn, and drinks for attendees in their vehicles. You can learn more at sdge.com/fairs. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
These hostilities have resulted in the tragic deaths of so many civilians, including children.
After 2 weeks of violence in Gaza, President Joe Biden praised the ceasefire Egypt brokered between Israel and Hamas. The truce comes with growing pressure here and abroad to end the conflict. Earlier yesterday, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont introduced a resolution to block a $735 million weapons sale to Israel. And in the House, freshman Democrat Jamal Bowman stressed the need for humanitarian aid.
I've heard directly from my constituents in New York's 16th District. Parents with children living in both Israel and Palestine have written in, and their fear for children's safety is palpable. Their voices are with me today and have made this situation personal.
The clash has left at least 12 Israelis and 230 Palestinians dead. A Senate hearing focused on Biden's plan to withdraw the last 13,000 troops from Afghanistan. Defense officials say terrorism there has come down dramatically since 2001. Virginia Democrat Tim Kaine argued now it's up to the Afghan people.
It can't be worth more to us than it is to them. And that's kind of a painful thing to say. It's kind of a cold, tough thing to say. But success in Afghanistan can't mean more to the United States than it means to the Afghans. And at the end of the day, I believe it won't.
Former President George W. Bush on Thursday said he's worried the removal of U.S. troops will create a vacuum in the region. Bipartisan legislation now before both chambers will boost financial support for victims of the mysterious directed energy attacks targeting U.S. personnel here and abroad. Victims report severe headaches, ringing and pressure in the ears, and even long-term brain damage. A $1.9 billion bill to increase capital security in the wake of the January 6 attack passed the House by just one vote. Some progressives pulled support at the last minute, reportedly over concerns about funding police. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Jamal Bowman voted present, and Ilhan Omar, Cori Bush, and Alana Presley voted no. All Republicans voted against the bill, arguing it was not bipartisan. Republican Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington argued the spending should await an overhaul of the Capitol Police Board she says was promised months ago.
I'm being told that if I don't vote for this, somehow I'm not standing behind our men and women in blue. When the House Administration Committee should have led the way with the honorary report, it was put out months ago, could have put these reforms in place, could have told us how this money would be spent. But they didn't.
Citing concerns about security and integrity, Arizona's Secretary of State recommended that Maricopa County officials replace all voting machines turned over to the private contractor for a 2020 election audit. The executive director of Cyber Ninja, the firm used for the audit, had posed conspiracy theories about the Arizona results in social media posts, which have since been deleted. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
A fun place to visit in El Cajon is the Water Conservation Garden. Located on the Cuyamaca College campus, this garden is fully surrounded with flowers, plants, ponds, wildlife, and educational interactives. It's a place for both children and adults to enjoy and learn about water-wise gardening, fire-resistant landscaping, native plants, and vegetable gardens.
The garden is a flutter, a flurry of activities. We have workshops here of every kind about your landscape, about making cheese, crafting classes.
Not only is this park a great place to visit, but it has an important mission behind its purpose. Director of Operations and Programs Pam Meisner emphasized the focus of the garden is to educate on eco-friendly and efficient gardening. Miss Smarty Plants is one of the workshop programs she runs for kids.
I think the best part about being Miss Smarty Plants is that I get to see the innocence, the wonder of a child every day. I truly believe in my heart of hearts, our youth is going to save the earth.
The garden offers field trips for kids, yoga classes, and other events depending on the season, but is also a pleasant and relaxing place to walk amid a beautiful environment.
once you know it's here and once you come here, you don't have to sell the garden. It sells itself.
Because this is a nonprofit organization, the garden's finances took a hit, causing it to require a submission fee for entry as opposed to being free.
We used to be a totally free garden. We used to be totally free. We changed to an admissions model in June when we were able to open back up.
The Water Conservation Garden is open Tuesday to Sunday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and open until 6 p.m. on Thursdays. For more information about the exciting and enjoyable things the Water Conservation Garden has to offer, visit the website at thegarden.org.
Miss Smarty Plant's mantra is, we can change the world with our own two hands.
And for East County Magazine, I'm Angela Kurish.
Conservation groups are calling for passage of a bill to phase out single-use plastics. The Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act would hold companies accountable for the full life cycle of their products and packaging and expand reuse and refill programs. San Luis Obispo Mayor Heidi Harmon says less than 10% of plastic has ever been recycled. Most of it goes from our recycling bins to the incinerator, the landfill, and ultimately the oceans.
The industry conned us into believing that plastics were being recycled. And as a result, since 2005, our plastic waste has doubled. And at this rate, there'll be more plastic in the ocean than fish by weight by 2050, which is crazy.
Opponents of the bill say it puts too big a burden on industry and could cause prices to rise. According to the Five Gyre Institute, nearly two-thirds of plastic becomes waste, and by 2050, global production is projected to triple, accounting for 20% of oil consumption. American companies ExxonMobil and Dow are the two largest plastic producers in the world. American Sustainable Business Council President David Levine says federal legislation is needed to spur companies to create truly recyclable products and packaging.
We can overhaul how we design, manufacture, distribute our products, transitioning from single use and toxic chemicals to a circular economy, a sustainable economy that creates new business opportunities and more jobs.
There are health implications as well. Last year, for the first time, researchers in Italy found microplastics in the placentas of unborn babies. Bills have been introduced in the House and Senate, but have yet to receive a hearing or a vote. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The County of San Diego reports a spike in overdose deaths that health officials are attributing to the COVID-19 pandemic lockdowns. In 2020, the county reported 457 fentanyl-related overdose deaths. That's a 202% increase over the year before. So to help save lives, the county will begin offering the nasal spray naloxone to the general public at several community-based locations and clinics throughout the region. Naloxone is a medication designed to rapidly reverse an opioid overdose and restore normal breathing and alertness. The overdose reversal drug will be available at no cost and without a prescription to anybody at risk of an overdose or to a family member or friend willing to administer the drug. The county made naloxone available to law enforcement many years ago, but time is critical since an overdose of some drugs, such as fentanyl, can cause death in minutes. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advises looking for these signs if you suspect somebody is overdosing from either prescription pain medicines or illegal opioids such as heroin. Small, constricted, pinpoint pupils in their eyes, limp body, pale, clammy skin, blue fingernails or blue lips, vomiting or gurgling sounds, an inability to speak or be awakened, loss of consciousness, slow breathing, or a slow heartbeat. The county offers many prevention and treatment programs across the region. People seeking help can call the San Diego County Access and Crisis Line, and the resource is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That phone number for the crisis line is 888-724-7240, or you can call 211 San Diego. Again, the number 888-724-7240. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org.
An association representing landlords has filed a lawsuit against San Diego County and supervisors after the supervisors voted to enact a temporary ban on most evictions during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Supervisors Nathan Fletcher, Nora Vargas, and Tara Lawson-Reamer voted in favor of the ordinance, which drew nearly 5 hours of impassioned testimony on both sides. East County Supervisors Joel Anderson and Jim Desmond opposed the measure, with Anderson joining several East County city officials in a press conference speaking out on behalf of rental owners. The ordinance prevents landlords from evicting tenants, in most cases, until 60 days after the state lifts all COVID-19 stay-home orders. Governor Gavin Newsom has said that will occur on June 15th, so the eviction moratorium will expire on August 15th. Landlords who agree to forgive 20% of back rent owed to them and who agree not to pursue eviction will receive 80% of the rent owed through the state's rent relief program. But tenants could still be evicted if they pose an, quote, imminent threat or safety threat to other tenants or occupants of the property. Supervisor Nora Vargas, who authored the measure, says it will help prevent families from becoming homeless. Many have lost jobs or business income. Some parents have been unable to return to work while schools are closed. Others lost family members or may have impaired health due to COVID-19. One renter testified that she and her husband received an eviction notice after contracting COVID, facing the nightmare of trying to find new housing while ill and quarantining. After the vote, Supervisor Lawson-Reamer tweeted, quote, "Today was a huge victory for our county's most vulnerable citizens." She thanked her two Democratic colleagues for, quote, "standing in solidarity with the thousands of residents facing eviction through one of the hardest economic crises of our lifetime." But Supervisor Anderson, a Republican, called the moratorium unfair but also completely unnecessary in a press conference before the May 4th hearing, noting that the county still has nearly $80 million in rent relief funds that have not yet been spent. Anderson also faults the county for not notifying cities about the measure, a process he says lacks transparency. Further, he says, quote, "This measure harms mom-and-pop landlords who are dependent upon rent revenue to pay their mortgages and retirement, forcing some into very uncomfortable, even hostile situations with uncooperative tenants." 91-year-old Dorothy McCorkle contacted Supervisor Anderson's office for help because she wants to move into a house that she's paid taxes on for 20 years and has been renting out. The home is nearer to a hospital than her current home. She calls the ordinance unfair to seniors, adding that the house is in a senior community, but the new law blocks her from moving in. Elected officials joining Anderson include El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and Councilman Steve Goble. Mayor Wells calls the action a, quote, power grab. After passage of the ordinance protecting renters, the Southern California Rental Housing Association has filed a lawsuit seeking an injunction to halt enforcement. The suit contends that the measure would stop small landlords from evicting tenants who are using units for illegal purposes, threatening or harassing landlords, or simply not paying rent. Although the ordinance does allow evictions for an imminent health or safety threat, the lawsuit claims that litigation risks make it unlikely landlords would pursue evictions in such cases. The landlord's lawsuit asserts, quote, "The ordinance threatens the lives and livelihoods of thousands of property owners in the county who provide tenants with housing." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Alexa Oslowski.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some trees that I absolutely love. And number one on that list is always and forever for me going to be the California live oaks. We're here in East County where the California live oaks are the most beautiful tree that we have. One live oak tree, mature, fully grown, can support up to 1,500 species of other life. They are so beautiful, so iconic, so much an important part of what we think we're seeing when we look at California. It's especially important to plant a live oak tree now because of the fact so many of the oldest of the trees out in the hills are being killed by the gold-spotted oak borer. That is a pest which is imported, and it is killing a lot of the old trees. But you can grow California live oaks on your property. What people don't understand is that's a fast-growing tree if you just hook it up to some irrigation while it's young. The first 10 years of life, you can water that tree year-round. You can put a dripper on it and walk away from it, let it get some water once a week, and it will grow to a 15 to 20-foot tree in just 10 years. And that's a good tree. That's a hardwood tree. That's not a junky tree like an ash. By the way, Don't plant ash trees. There's a bad disease coming from back east, which is eventually going to kill all the ash trees in California, as it has all the ash trees from east of Ohio coming west. So plant yourself a beautiful California live oak. That wouldn't be limited to just the live oaks. If you live out in the backcountry, consider an Engelmann oak too. That was Kara Knott's favorite tree, and that is a beautiful tree. It's also known as a Mesa oak. It will take less water than the California live oak and do beautifully. Some other good trees, not all of them natives, that you could put in your yard. There are two great trees from Australia that do so well here. They're quick growing and they are great shade trees. They don't have any obnoxious habits. They don't have terrible roots. They don't drop a big mess. They're good trees. My favorite of them is called the peppermint tree or the peppermint willow tree. It's Agonis flexuosa. A-G-O-N-I-S, Agonis flexuosa. It's a beautiful tree. It has a natural weeping form, gets about 25 feet tall, maybe 15 feet wide, and grows very quickly. After a few years, you can shut the water off to it, and it'll make it on its own. It smells lovely, and it has the cutest flowers when it blooms. It hangs down something that looks like a black ribbon with little white flowers on it. The ribbon is maybe half an inch wide. It's really a cute tree. And everybody I know who's ever used it as a yard tree or on the side of the house has been delighted with it. A very similar tree is called the Australian willow, Geigera parviflora. It's about the same size. It's very drought tolerant. It's similar to the Agonis and a very popular small, non-messy tree. Now let's talk about a nice tree that's messy. What does that mean? Well, it means that it mulches itself. And since we want to mulch things here in East County, this is a great tree. It takes care of itself. It's an African sumac tree. You can see those in front of the El Cajon Library, all the way around the library. There's another one at the Rancho San Diego Library. That's the big tree that's kind of a dull green color out front, reddish bark. It's the first tree that I planted when I moved onto my property 13 years ago. It's very popular with birds. It grows with virtually no water once you get it established. After 2 years, shut the water off. It'll be fine on its own. That's a tree that if you prune it correctly while it's still a baby, it will grow the rest of its life for you, and you will never have to prune it again. Another small tree that's very pretty to put in your yard. Put in a bronze loquat. It's not a big tree. It'll never get over about 15 feet tall, maybe 12 feet wide, even if it's very successful. And the leaves are big and green and glossy, and it also bears fruit. Now, I personally don't care for the fruit. It has a big seed and kind of a weird orange fruit around it. It doesn't taste bad. It just doesn't seem to me worth the effort, but scrub jays adore it. I know that on my bronze loquat, I never get to eat the fruit because the birds find it before I do. So those are some ideas that you can try in your yard. And I think that all of these trees are basically pain-free. You won't be calling the pruning guy constantly to come and hack on it because these are good trees.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Scanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.